are listening to a free version of Majority Report with Sam Steeder. To support this show and get another 15 minutes of daily program, go to majority.fm, please.
The Majority Report with Sam Steeder, where every day's casual Friday. That means Monday is casual Monday, Tuesday, casual Tuesday, Wednesday, casual hump day, Thursday, casual Thurs, that's what we call it, and Friday, casual Shabbat. The Majority Report with Sam Steeder.
It is Friday, May 24th, 2019. My name is Sam Steeder. This is the five-time award-winning Majority Report. We are broadcasting live steps from the industrially ravaged Gowanus Canal in the heartland of America, downtown Brooklyn, USA. On the program today, on Casual Friday, columnist with The Intercept, host of the Deconstructed podcast, presenter on Al Jazeera English TV, the programs Up Front and Head to Head, Mehdi Hasan will be joining us. Also on the program today, ostensibly to give us a film recommendation for the weekend, film guy Matthew will be here. Meanwhile, Trump gives Attorney General Barr power to declassify intelligence work investigating the investigators after they've already been investigated by independent investigatory agencies. And for the first time in our history, a publisher charged with espionage act charges. Julian Assange faces charges over the 2010 Iraq War video and State Department cable leaks. And Trexit. Theresa May successfully lands her own departure, as it were. Next up could be really ugly for Britain.
Or maybe really good.
Mm.
Go vote for Corbyn.
And as the Mad King holds court, the impeachment battle hits a fevered pitch. Trump administration looks to allow health care services to discriminate against transgender people. 85,000 cops have been investigated for misconduct across the country over the past 10 years, according to a new USA Today study. D.C. Circuit will review Congress's subpoena power for Trump's accountants in July. Senate passes $19 billion in disaster relief, including the releasing of nearly $10 billion to Puerto Rico, involving no border funding. Meanwhile, Senate Armed Services Committee votes for another military spending increase, because why not? And a new Fed report shows many left behind in this supposed economic boom. All this and more on today's program, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to the show. A lot of news over the past 24 hours. This situation with Assange is very, very problematic. And very important for people to separate the individual being charged with, and even the facts surrounding the individual being charged, because what's important here is the legal theory which is being used in this charge. The legal theory is incredibly, I don't even say problematic, because it's more problematic than just saying problematic. The theory in which the U.S. is bringing this prosecution applies to every single reporter in this country who reports on national security issues. You can see, go to their Twitter handle, and you will see stuff that they could be prosecuted for under this theory. Go to their websites And you will see just their solicitation would call for prosecution. It does not matter whether you think Julian Assange is a journalist or not, or whether he was involved in journalism. The theory of the case is applicable regardless of who it's being applied to. There is no charge that, like, oh, but if we deem that you're a journalist, you're exempt from this. That does not, it doesn't work that way. We'll get more into this as the show goes on, but this is hugely important for people to understand. As to with Bill Barr getting full and complete authority to declassify government secrets, and specifically, I mean, he's going to be doing it in the context of an investigation or an audit of the investigation into Russia's election interference in 2016. There has already been multiple investigations of this, right? People understand that. This is just a way for him to selectively leak classified documents that presumably will be weaponized by the Trump administration. Highly problematic. And we're going to talk more about the sort of ongoing impeachment war that's happening now that is involving Nancy Pelosi, doctored Nancy Pelosi videos, a new narrative, it seems, on the right in attacking Nancy Pelosi, and Donald Trump holding court with the court gestures and all of his dukes, I guess, and I have no idea.
Got courtiers.
Yeah, there you go. Guys wearing cowboy hats around him. Like, I'm not unclear what he had this press conference. Not even a press conference, some type of presentation where he's surrounded by everybody who works at the White House, I guess. I don't know who all these people were. And he had to discuss the meeting in which he stormed out of with Nancy Pelosi because Pelosi had said that he's engaged in a cover-up. And, of course, the cover-up reference was the fact that the administration on multiple fronts, not just involving the Russia investigation, is refusing to release documents and refusing people to testify in front of Congress. Basically saying you have no business involved in oversight. And to prove that he did not storm out of this meeting, like Nancy Pelosi said. Crazy Nancy is what he's calling you now.
Disintegrating Nancy.
He decided to call on people who work for the administration to basically give him character witnesses for him. And this is how that went. We're in full on, you know, authoritarian territory here.
The great Larry Kudlow, could you come here, please? You're not afraid of television, I know.
I
think he's done more live television. Maybe Regis has you by a little bit, right? Not by much. Larry, you were at the meeting yesterday, right? So they have this narrative that they want to put out, because I saw Crying Chuck yesterday.
I love how
he went out.
He gets the microphone and Larry doesn't. Go ahead.
He said he was stomping and he was this and that. And, Larry, you were there. There were many people there, by the way. Many people. We can get you 20 other people to say this. What was my attitude yesterday at the meeting?
Mercy's right. Kellyanne's right. You were very calm and you laid out the case. You had a lot of numbers of what you've contributed in terms of paperwork and witnesses and so forth. While you were there, they didn't say anything. Speaker didn't say anything. And you left. You made your case.
That's all it was. Very calm. Very
much calmer than some of our trade meetings.
I was saying calm like I was at the news conference minutes ago.
Mr. President, I wanted to say one more thing. When the 12 Democrats were here on April 30th for the first meeting, they went out to the sticks and addressed the press. And I think you should go back and play Speaker Pelosi's comments from that day, because she made very clear that it was a productive, constructive move toward infrastructure. And some of you asked her, how will you investigate him and work on infrastructure? And she said, we didn't talk about investigations. We're here to talk about infrastructure. So that changed yesterday, an hour before she came here.
And there's really, if you look at it, hi, Sarah. We're just talking about the meeting. You were there yesterday, were you? Yes. Just come forward. Does anybody know Sarah? Sarah, we're just talking about the meeting yesterday.
Pause it. There's so much of this laughter is like just sort of this nervous laughter of like, this is weird. This is weird. Go ahead.
At the meeting yesterday, the narrative was I was screaming and ranting and raving, and it was terrible.
That's
not true. I watched Nancy, and she was all crazy yesterday. She put the hands and everything. She reminded me of Beto. She actually reminded me of Beto, maybe a little bit worse. But just out of curiosity, you were there. What was my tone yesterday at the meeting?
Very calm. I've seen both, and this was definitely not angry or ranting. Very calm and straightforward and clear that we have to actually get to work and do good things for the American people, and it's going to be impossible to do that if we're spending all of our time fighting. So,
there you go, folks. What a loyal crew of people.
They're the best people.
I guess. I mean, if there's if there needs to be some type of crime blotter after this administration is over and people need to bring all of them into trial, like all you need to do is refer to this tape and just walk them in.
And Sarah, can you tell them how many people were at my inauguration too while we're on this?
Exactly. The biggest inauguration, right, Sarah? Right, Sarah. This is really just disturbing, but... And we'll talk about this with Mehdi. On some level, Trump is getting everything that I think Nancy Pelosi is afraid that he will get from an impeachment without the impeachment at this point. This week we've had hearings on Medicare for All, which got no attention. We're having just, you know, a more onslaught of news. We'll talk more about this with Mehdi. But before we do, should tell you that when you're hiring, it's super difficult, particularly when you have a small business. I can tell you that from personal experience. Every day we get to do this show, and to have a project like hiring somebody, huge pain in the butt. And this is why I say you should always start to look for people before you need it, because you never know. Michael just may call in one day like, oh, yeah, no, I decided I'm moving to Britain or something. You know, like, I'm sorry, I meant to tell you.
TMBS UK.
Right. TMBS UK.
There you go.
You didn't see it?
But there is...
I didn't hit the send button.
Here
sorry.
Is a place where you can go where hiring is simple, fast, and smart. A place where growing businesses connect qualified candidates. That place is ZipRecruiter.com/majority. Our own Brendan, sitting in today in the co-pilot seat of the show, came to us via ZipRecruiter. Proven success we've had. ZipRecruiter sends you over 100 of the web's leading job boards, but they don't stop there. With their powerful matching technology, ZipRecruiter scans thousands of resumes to find people with the right experience and invites them to apply to your job. As applications come in, ZipRecruiter analyzes each one, spotlights the top candidates, so you never miss a great match. ZipRecruiter is so effective that 4 out of 5 employers who post on ZipRecruiter get quality candidate through the site within the first day. Right now, my listeners can try ZipRecruiter for free at this exclusive web address, ZipRecruiter.com/majority. That's ZipRecruiter.com/majority. MAJORITY, ZipRecruiter.com/majority. ZipRecruiter, the smartest way to hire. As always, links are in the podcast description and in the YouTube description. Check it out. We should, we're going to play this Nancy Pelosi stuff in a minute or two. But this bar stuff, I just want to make sure that people understand what's going on here. The president has given the attorney general, like I say, full and complete authority to declassify government secrets. This is a memorandum that was issued last night. And it orders U.S. intelligence agencies to cooperate promptly with Barr's audit of the investigation. So basically, he can just run through there. And Barr has made it quite clear, not only through his work for Donald Trump, but in his earlier work with George Herbert Walker Bush, He wants to make the presidency significantly more powerful than it is. He is one of these unitary executive guys who may not espouse the theory per se, but he certainly operates under it. And this is basically just more about protecting Trump, intimidating anybody who's going to offer any information, probably prevent some people in some ways from testifying to Congress. We also have the release of a memo that was obtained by the Washington Post. It was a May 8th internal memo where Acting Defense Secretary Patrick Shanahan mandated new restrictions on the way Pentagon shares information with Congress about military operations around the world. It outlines a half dozen guidelines, including requirements that military officials and political appointees evaluate whether the request from Congress, quote, contains sufficient information to demonstrate a relationship to the legislative function. First of all, this is just not how it works. The military is not responsible for determining whether a request from Congress is legit based upon criteria that, frankly, is completely arbitrary. Congress has a full oversight authority over all of our government, particularly that it funds. And the idea that a request needs to contain sufficient information to demonstrate a relationship to the legislative function is just nuts. But this is the tack that the Trump administration is taking. It's all part of, in some way, just massive obstruction for the oversight function of Congress. And, I mean, this stuff alone seems to me to be impeachment worthy. But we will talk to Mehdi Hasan about that in just one moment. Let's take a quick break. We'll be right back with Mehdi Hasan. We are back. Sam Seder on the Majority Report. It is a pleasure to welcome to the program columnist for The Intercept, host of the Deconstructed podcast, presenter on Al Jazeera English TV, on the shows Up Front and Head to Head. Mehdi Hasan, welcome to the program.
Thanks for having me on. Hello.
Mehdi, I think listeners of this program know that I'm a big fan of yours. I think you give some of the best interviews, most probing interviews that we get to see in this country. Maybe if we have time, I'll ask you why we don't see more of what you do in this country. It seems, but let's before we get to meta. Let's talk about what's going on with impeachment. Over the past week, we have seen, I don't know, sort of like these, in the last episode you had of Deconstructed, actually, dealt with this. I think it was the last one with Tom Steyer and Ezra Klein.
Yeah, it was a couple of weeks ago. Yeah, a couple of weeks ago.
Now, all right. So, I was struck by that because it seems like over the past couple of weeks, the reasons to impeach have increased, and certainly the within the Democratic caucus, the cries for it, as it were, have increased. Just give me your sense of what has changed.
I mean, personally, if I look at the evidence on impeachment, nothing has actually changed in the sense that it's the same case as it was before. There was a case for impeachment last week, last month, last year. The case for impeachment preceded the publication of the Mueller report. I've always argued, like Rashida Tlaib and others, that you don't even need the Mueller report. You don't even need the Russia investigation to make a case for impeachment against this president. There's so many things he's done, from the hush money payments to Stormy Daniels in violation of campaign finance laws, to trying to use the federal government to go after Amazon because the owner of Amazon owns the Washington Post and the Washington Post is mean to him, to him trying to stop the FBI building from being sold across the street from the Trump Hotel because it'll affect the value of his hotel, to trying to illegally divert humanitarian aid relief from Puerto Rico to Texas and Louisiana. I mean, the emoluments clause, just taking money from foreign governments for his hotels and golf clubs. I mean, there's such a long list of, long-standing impeachable offenses that he commits in front of our eyes, that I've always believed the case for impeachment has been very strong since 2017. In the last couple of weeks, what's happened, Sam, is that members of Congress have been issuing all these subpoenas and trying to get members of the administration and former members of the administration to come before them. They've been trying to get tax returns. And Trump, unsurprisingly, here's a guy who thinks there are no constraints on him or his administration, has said no and blocked them every turn and taken them to court. And I think, like with all human beings, when it gets personal, it gets a bit more urgent. I think members of Congress are like, wow, he's not letting us do our jobs. And now suddenly it's become a bit more urgent for them. And obviously the Justin Amash intervention, the Republican congressman last weekend, comes out, does this massive multi-part Twitter thread making the case for impeachment, making these Democrats look rather foolish, because why is it a conservative Tea Party Republican? Why is he making the case for impeachment and saying Trump has met the threshold for impeachment? Why aren't they?
I mean, do you think that Amish's coming out has been underplayed by the media on some level? I mean, I just feel like if this was if the shoe was on the other foot, I feel like this guy would be on every single television show, wall to wall, and on the front page of the Times. And I think the Times put it on like page 19.
Yes, yes, yes. I saw somebody tweeted that. It was in the, I don't read the paper, I'm an online person. But yeah, I believe it was A19 or something in the paper, which is absurd. And you're right. I think, those of us with longer memories will remember. Do you remember Joe Lieberman during the Clinton impeachment when he came out saying, that Clinton's done impeachable? It was a huge story that a Democratic senator was turning on his party and turning on his president, especially when your Republican Party is so loyal to Trump. To have a break in the wall, to have a crack in the Trump wall, Republican wall, is a big deal. And to be fair to the media, though, I believe Amash doesn't like doing much interviews. I know Chris Hayes and others were trying to get him on and he hasn't. So it's not all the fault of the media in terms of why you haven't seen him on TV. I don't think he likes doing that much. That's why he's been taking to Twitter. Maybe that's his Trumpian direct way of getting his point across. He's done another amazing Twitter thread yesterday, which I urge your listeners to go look at, on obstruction of justice. And I just wonder, why hasn't Nancy Pelosi, why hasn't Steny Hoyer, why haven't Democratic leaders done that kind of Twitter thread outlining the evidence in the Mueller report against Trump on obstruction of justice? But yeah, it should be a bigger story. Of course it should be a bigger story. Every Republican member of the House should be asked, what is it about Justin Amash's Twitter thread that you disagree with?
Right. Right. And all right. So all right, with that said, all right, so we have Amash coming out here, which if I understand the argument that that Ezra Klein was making on your program, was that he thinks the most compelling argument is that it's the sort of moral or ethical or constitutional thing to do, is the most compelling argument. But he thinks that that's outweighed by the potential political cost. I mean, it seems to me over the past couple of weeks, particularly with the obstruction and specifically because it does feel on some measure like Trump is challenging the Democrats to impeach him. It almost makes it more compelling from a political argument, because the one thing that was not that Ezra did not bring up It was only about the lack of political value or the danger of impeachment. But it seems to me there's now a very good argument that there is a political cost to not impeaching to the Democrats that wasn't there for Republicans when they impeached Clinton.
Exactly. Had the Republicans not impeached Clinton, there was no kind of fallout for them. It wasn't Clinton wasn't going to use that. He wasn't going to run in the, you know, he wasn't even running in the next election. But right. Al Gore wasn't going to run and say, ha ha, you know, blowjobs not impeachable.
Right. Exactly.
They screwed it up. I think what we know for a fact is that Donald Trump is already, forget next year, he already has Bill Barr now going out investigating the investigators, calling everything spying, saying the crimes were committed on the other side, a taxpayer-funded White House Twitter account tweeted out yesterday. We know that he will go into next year's election saying it was a waste of time. It was all 18 killers, I think he referred to Mueller's team yesterday. He will say, I'm cleared, I'm innocent, there was no obstruction, no collusion, nothing, and the Democrats didn't impeach me, which proves I was right. And I think that, you know, people say the cost of impeachment. I've never denied that there could be a cost to impeachment, but there's also a cost to not impeaching. Inaction also has a cost, and we're seeing in front of our eyes. Just on the whole challenging Democrats to impeach, I just don't buy this argument. Pelosi has said this in private to her caucus. I've heard journalists say it. I just don't buy it that he's goading the Democrats to impeach him. It's this idea of Trump as this great, you know, 4D chess player. I just don't buy it. Everything, Sam, we know about Donald Trump, his personality, his ego, his mindset, his narcissism, his obsession with himself in history. The idea that he would want to be only the third president in history to be impeached makes no sense whatsoever. This is a guy who did a press conference yesterday and called up one member of staff after another to testify that he didn't lose his temper in private. Right? That's how thin-skinned and self-obsessed he is. The idea that he's okay with being impeached is absurd. I just see no evidence for that claim. It's asserted time and again, I don't buy it. As for the costs of impeaching, Ezra made this argument. He made it well. Others have made it not so well. I saw Gloria Borger of CNN write a piece saying why Democrats shouldn't impeach. And they point back to Clinton and they say Clinton's popularity went up. They say Newt Gingrich lost his job. They say the midterms, the Democrats did well in the 98 midterms in the midst of that impeachment. What they don't say is that what happened in 2000, Sam? What happened in the next presidential election? I don't remember the Democrats winning that election.
Right. George and w. Joe Bush Lieberman was picked the vice president because he.
And Al Gore distanced himself from Bill Clinton, yep. Which was a mistake. We know in hindsight, Bill Clinton on the campaign trail, whatever you think of Bill Clinton, is a brilliant campaigner. And he was popular, ironically. And Al Gore distancing himself. So the idea that this won't cost the Republicans, even if it's a failed impeachment attempt, we come on to the whole idea of it being a failed attempt, but even if they fail to get him out, the point is the idea that this won't harm the Republicans. Again, I just don't see evidence for that. In actual fact, the Clinton analogy is not the best analogy because Clinton was popular. His popularity went up and we all knew it was a bullshit impeachment. Here, on the other hand, we know there's very good grounds for impeachment. We know 900 federal prosecutors who worked under Democrats and Republicans have said there's a very good case for impeachment. We know that Trump's popularity is nowhere near Bill Clinton's popularity. He's the most unpopular president in living memory and he will only get more unpopular during an impeachment hearing.
So what do you think? I mean, so where would you play? I think this is obviously the argument that that Nancy Pelosi has had and may have.
She's ridiculous on this. I'm sorry. She's just ridiculous.
And she may have resolved it. But let me get your sense of this. I mean, because it also seems to me that everything that Nancy Pelosi is worried about, right, in terms of what impeachment would bring is happening already.
Exactly. Oh, we're going to divide the country. Hello, have you looked around? It was divided before Trump came to office when the Republicans blocked everything Obama did. And it's been very divided since Trump came to office when you have people walking into synagogues and massacring people and using the same rhetoric as the president and his party about, you know, white replacement and left bringing immigrants in to change the country. So, you know, this idea that it's, you know, oh, we're going to divide things further. It's just not worth it. I think she was the phrase she used a couple of months ago in a Washington Post. I mean, did you see the stuff she said yesterday, Sam? She said that she wants Trump's family and staff to stage an intervention for the good of the country. I don't think I've heard a Democrat say anything more ridiculous since Donald Trump came to office. We're now supposed to expect that Mike Pence, Ben Carson, Melania and Barron Trump are going to save us. They're going to save the Republic. This is dereliction of duty. This is political malpractice. This is madness from Pelosi. I'm sorry. It just is.
I mean, I don't I don't buy her public calling saying that it's going to lead to polarization. I think she just thinks that this is going to be that impeachment would be a distraction, that it's going to make the Democrats look bad, and it's going to mobilize the Republican base. But the Republican base is already mobilized.
They're already mobilized.
And everything that has gone on this week is a perfect example of Donald Trump not needing impeachment in any way to create the very spectacle that Pelosi is worried about, except for there is no counterbalance. All we saw this week was that presentation where he had the courtiers walk up and say how sweet he is, but there is no across there's no hearings.
You're spot on, and this is the problem. The problem is not only kind of Nancy Pelosi's misreading of the situation. She also tweeted yesterday. Can I just read out this tweet she said yesterday? It's an astonishing tweet. She said, when the extremely stable genius, referring to Trump's comment about himself, starts acting more presidential, I'll be happy to work with him on infrastructure, trade, and other issues. First of all, happy to work with him is a horrible phrase to use in relation to a white nationalist in the White House. But this idea that when he starts acting more presidential, she knows he's not going to act more presidential. We know that he's not going to act more presidential. We know that she knows that he's not going to act more presidential. So what is this charade for? Is it just for the DC Beltway press? Who is she performing for? This whole thing is a waste of time. As you say, in that vacuum, Trump is doing his own counterpunching. He sent off Bill Barr now to go after the Democrats, and the Democrats still won't do anything to defend themselves. You know, the old line about, the Republicans bring the Democrats bring a knife to a gunfight and the Republicans bring a rocket launcher. They're sending Bill Barr with the Attorney General now to investigate the investigators. Trump has given him power over the intelligence agencies. Corey Lewandowski was on Fox Business last night saying that by March or April, they plan to have Comey and Strzok and McCabe on trial. Trump, in fact, said yesterday when he was asked about treason, when an NBC reporter asked Trump, you know that treason requires the death penalty. Who are you referring to? He just smiled. He nodded and said, yeah, I'm referring to Comey and McCabe. And he's talking about executing the former head of the FBI. And yet Democrats are still around arguing with each other in some weird circular firing squad, arguing with each other in private caucus meetings, whether it's not time or not to impeach. It's madness. Seriously, I have no other word for it but madness.
Do you think that Pelosi's language has changed at all this week? I mean, my sense is that when she said about the cover-up, what we were watching – and maybe I'm giving her too much credit. Maybe this is just sort of like, maybe this is more, aspirational on my part as well. But my sense is that, like, she's got to move to plan B. Plan A was, we're not going to impeach. We're just going to, we're going to show people that we're hard at work trying to make a infrastructure bill. And Chuck Schumer has a bipartisan bill to buffer the do not call registry, and that's what American people want from us.
He wants to make seats on airplanes bigger. That's one of his big priorities.
I mean, I think those are valid things to be working on.
But there's an existential threat to democracy.
Yes, exactly. They should not be your top line at this point. But do you think that she's like having a trying to do a sort of a public pivot that starts with, like, there's a cover up and I want there to be an intervention, and apparently they're not going to start there. Like, it feels to me like she has she realizes she lost that battle in the Democratic caucus, and now she has to make it public, if only to say to those members in purple districts, because it seems to me that's what she's trying to protect, is her purple district members. Look, I did my best. And so, you got to stick with me. I did my best, that type of thing.
Yeah. I mean, I wish I could agree with that, but, I'm not sure I do buy that, to be honest. I mean, I wrote a piece back in November straight after the midterms, and I said she was the wrong leader. Her and Schumer are the wrong leaders for the wrong time. You know, their job is to fight fascism, and they're looking for common ground, was the phrase Pelosi used. I said, you can't find common ground with Trump. You know, let's forget all this bullshit about Infrastructure Week. In the intervening months, there were moments where I thought, okay, maybe I was wrong about her. Maybe she's got a plan. And, but Occam's razor tells you, go for that simple answer. The simple answer is she doesn't want to impeach him. She's made that. How many times is she going to tell us that she doesn't want to impeach him before we believe her?
Right.
We're kind of treating her the same way we treat Trump, which is actually there's a secret plan. And all of the reporting that I've seen this week suggests that in private, she's just as adamantly opposed to impeachment as she is in public. It's not as if in private she's telling her people, hold on, I've got a plan. I've got a cunning plan, Baldrick style from Blackadder. I've got a cunning plan to win this. No, she doesn't. I think she genuinely thinks, you know, this is what our strategy is to protect the purple seats. We're hard at work. And by the way, on the whole, hard at work. This nonsense idea, remember the main argument that Democrats use, they tell me, we can't impeach because we don't have a majority in the Senate. We can't get it through. So we should focus on other things. Hold on. How do you get the other things through the Senate then? I think there's 100 bills right. or something, absurd high number of things that they've passed since November, all languishing in the Senate. So even that argument makes no sense, that it's a distraction. We could be getting on with important work that doesn't pass in the Senate anyways.
Right. That's a great point. And I still contend that that Pelosi ultimately has to say, we're going to impeach. We know the Senate is unlikely to break from Donald Trump because there isn't a Justin Amash amongst them or something like that. I mean, there's plenty of ways rhetorically
to do it. But that could actually help you. I mean, if you want to get into
exactly.
it, you could actually make a political argument that if the House makes a good enough case for impeachment, passes impeachment, the polls shift as they did during the Nixon era. They started off anti, then switched pro after the House Judiciary Committee wrote articles of impeachment. If the House impeaches him and public opinion shifts, then yeah, the Senate Republicans are on the defensive going into 2020.
Absolutely.
That's just a fact.
Absolutely.
You asked Susan Collins, why are you not impeaching him?
Well, let me ask you this. The bar powers that he gets now about
yes.
being able to release any intelligence stuff, and but also combined with on almost the same day, and I'm sure it's more of a coincidence, but the fact that both have happened, I think, suggests that they think there could be even more problems in this regard. The new indictment of Julian Assange, which
yes.
I mean. Look, I think The Intercept right now probably has on most of your Twitter handles, like, here is our whatever the device is to drop us, you know, anonymous
yeah.
tips or whatnot. I mean, you're soliciting people to tell you government secrets. And that is part of the charge against Assange. Just simply, like, literally that there was something on WikiLeaks website saying, you know, we encourage you to send us tips, essentially, and leaked information. This seems to me, I mean, the Assange thing in and of itself, I think, is highly, it's super scary, frankly. But
yes,
at a time where you've got Barr going in with authority to investigate these people, it seems to me it's also very convenient to put a real chill on investigative reporters in the national security state with something like this.
Yes. They want to put a chill everywhere, don't they, Sam? I mean, in the national security state, let's just deal with the national security side. If you're an FBI agent on the counterintelligence side and you're investigating, I don't know, the next election and protections ahead of 2020, and you come across evidence that the Russians or the Chinese or anyone else is right now intervening again, possibly to help Donald Trump or just intervening, what do you do about that now, right now? Are you really going to make a big thing out of it? Are you going to risk your career? You're going to risk the president of the United States saying by name that you're guilty of treason? On television, as he's done about Strzok and Page and McCabe and Comey. I mean, it's going to chill the investigators. And that's the whole point. We know that. That's what Barr is doing. Barr is not the Attorney General of the United States. He is the personal lawyer of the President of the United States. He is Donald Trump's Roy Cohn, the corrupt personal lawyer that Trump has always wanted in that position. That weirdly, Jeff Sessions, for all his many sins, didn't play that role. Bill Barr is playing that role. And this is Bill Barr, don't forget, who was Attorney General before under Bush Sr. and helped cover up Iran-Contra for George Bush Sr. and the Ronald Reagan administration. So he has a lot of form in this regard. And then there's the media angle, where we know that the Trump administration, you know, they charged Assange this week, extra charges, 17 extra charges under the Espionage Act. We know that the Espionage Act has been weaponized, politicized over the last, 15, 20 years, first by George Bush, then big time by Barack Obama, to go after leakers. That's not what it was designed for in World War I, but it's been used in that way by presidents of both parties. Obama prosecuted, I think, 10 prosecutions yep. under the Espionage Act, more than all of the presidents combined in U.S. history. Obama prosecuted more people than all of them combined under the Espionage Act. And then you have Donald Trump, who's now on course in 2 years to overtake what Obama did in 8 years, which is astonishing and scary and chilling.
And
to go after. And their argument is, well, Assange is not a journalist. That's their fundamental argument.
But their theory of charging him applies to every journalist. I mean, there is
exactly.
we decided to go after him because he's not a journalist. But there's no asterisk there that says, and we will never go after people we consider to be journalists. I mean, aside from their their inability to make that determination, it's
not just inability. Do you trust Donald Trump and Bill Barr to decide who is and who isn't a journalist in the United States?
Right. And even if we did, it still is not necessary for their under the legal theory that they're pointing out here in this indictment. And we should say, you know, like to that point about those FBI agents or whoever's working in counterintelligence at this point, worried about, you know, letting investigating what's potential interference with our election in 2020, but Reality Winner, who provided information to The Intercept, she is in jail right now, and that information was about Russian interference in the election. This seems to me to be just dangerous on a multitude of levels. Even if you don't synthesize this stuff.
Even if you don't, by the way, just a disclaimer, even if you don't like Assange, one of the problems here, of course, is they've gone after Julian Assange, who is hated by different people on different parts of the political spectrum for different reasons. He used to be hated by the right because of the original stuff WikiLeaks did on the Iraq War and publishing national security secrets. Then he became beloved on the right because he was seen to be helping Trump. And liberals hated him because he's seen as a kind of Russian agent who helped get Donald Trump elected. And the point is, it doesn't matter what your views of Julian Assange are. I'm not a fan of Julian Assange as a human being or in some of the stuff he did to help Trump get elected. But the point is, as you say, it's the principles behind this. The Times, the New York Times published the cables that WikiLeaks got and on Iraq and Afghanistan at the time. Remember, these charges this week are not to do with the election or Russian interference. They're to do with the original stuff that first made WikiLeaks famous, the State Department cables, the cables about the Iraq War and the Afghanistan War, which showed us the war crimes that were being committed, et cetera, et cetera. And the New York Times published that. And the New York Times said yesterday, look, this is what we do, too. We try and get information from officials that want to be, you know, that the government wants to keep it secret. We take steps to protect the confidentiality of our sources. We publish classified information. So how do we know that they're not going to come after us next?
I think they're going to. I mean, I don't know if it's going to be the Times, but this is the way.
Sam, come on. Donald Trump has such respect for a free press.
Well, it may not even be just Donald Trump. It may be President Cotton. It may be, who knows? President Crenshaw.
No, of course. Every president can pick up on the previous president. Obviously, this president in particular, we know, is a wannabe tin pot dictator and is obsessed with restraining the press. You know, he's talked about taking away licenses that don't exist, talking about suing papers. He's talked about, you know, enemies of the people, fake news, scum, liars, all of the rhetoric that he's used and the violence that he's incited against journalists. This is just part of that.
All right. I know we're going just a little bit long here, but I just want to take a little bit of time. It's already sort of seems to have dropped out of the news, the fact that we were very, very close at the beginning of the week, it felt like, to a war with Iran. This part of the story is sort of the two facets of Donald Trump. One fascistic, the other completely incompetent and without.
Thank God.
Yeah. Well,
thank God for that combination.
Well, yes and no, because he seemed to have hired John Bolton, despite the mustache, and Mike Pompeo without really any awareness that these guys were have basically committed their professional careers to getting into a war with Iran. And somewhere over the last week and a half, he sort of found that out and went in and told the military, yeah, no, I don't want to have a war with Iran. But give me your assessment of what has taken place.
I'll meet you halfway. I'm not sure I fully buy that analysis, because I think we know from the reporting that Trump was well aware of Bolton's record when he passed him over first time and took H.R. McMaster as his national security advisor once General Flynn had gone. I think Trump is well aware of Bolton's hawkishness and Pompeo's hawkishness. And don't forget, Trump, while pretending to be this anti-interventionist, he fooled a few people with his nonsensical stuff about I opposed the Iraq War, I opposed Libya. In fact, he supported both military interventions during the campaign. On Iran, he was always hawkish. To be fair to him, he's consistent on this one issue. He stuck to his one promise. He said he would tear up the Iran nuclear deal, and he did. It's one of the rare promises that he kept. And from the very beginning, he appointed hawks to his administration on Iran. General Michael Flynn was a massive hawk on Iran. He only gave one press briefing before he lost his job in, 21 days, 22 days? And he came out to the White House podium and he said, Iran, we're putting you on notice. That was in the very first month of the Trump administration. All of the hawks in the administration are united on Iran. Now, does Trump want a war, not want a war? Who knows? I always find it hard to say, what does Trump want? I don't think his brain is coherent enough to know what he wants. I think he follows a bunch of prejudices. Yes, he said on camera, hope not, hope we don't have a war, he said, you know, the other day. On the other hand, he then tweeted, if Iran attacks us, we will end Iran. The kind of fire and fury rhetoric he used against North Korea. And most experts say that if we do go to war with Iran, if the US and its allies, whoever its allies are left, goes to war with Iran, it will probably be by accident because of this belligerent rhetoric, right, because of provocations, because hardliners on both sides decide to react to each other's ways in hardline ways. You saw Trump say, you know, as I said, end Iran. Look at the polling, Sam, out this week. There's a poll, really worrying poll out from Reuters this week. And there's some good news in it, in that 60% of Americans said the US should not conduct a preemptive strike on Iran. Good. The bad news is 80% of Americans say that if Iran would attack the US, then the US military should retaliate. Half of them say airstrikes. The other half say an invasion, which is complete bonkers madness. And think about that. 80% of Americans say if we're attacked, what does that mean? Who defines what an attack is? A skirmish between boats in the Persian Gulf? An alleged attack on a US consulate in Iraq? What defines what an attack is that justifies an invasion, which is basically World War III? 50% of Americans, Sam, say they think America and Iran will go to war within the next few years, which is up 8 points on last June. That's worrying in itself, because the more you think something is inevitable, the more you think something's likely to happen, it will happen. It becomes a self-fulfilling prophecy.
Do you think that we are in some respects out of that sort of zone of where, I mean, because it felt like for a couple of weeks we were fully sort of
I think we can go back into that zone so quickly, Sam, given the nature of the news cycle, given we know Donald Trump would love stories that distract from his domestic problems. This is a guy who tweeted in 2011 that Obama will attack Iran to get reelected. With Trump, it's always projection. If that's what he said about Obama, it's really what he's thinking about himself.
Right.
And I think that's what's the real worry with the nature of Trump, the nature of the media and the fast changing. And they want to send more troops now. They're announcing this week more troops to the Gulf. The more troops you have there, the more likelihood of a conflict, the more targets you present your opponents. And that's always been my problem. And then, you know, the Americans say, oh, well, we're worried the Iranians may target us. That's because you're in their backyard. I mean, that's always been the problem with the U.S. You go into the Persian Gulf. It's called the Persian Gulf for a reason, Sam.
Mehdi Hasan, folks, check out Deconstructed Podcast. We'll put links to all of your stuff in
Thanks so much,
podcast.
And thanks for having me on.
Thank you. Real pleasure. Appreciate it.
Love your stuff, Sam. Thank Bye-bye. You.
All right, folks, we're going to take a quick break. When we come back, it's Casual Friday. We will have Matthew Film Guy on to give us a film choice for the weekend. Just a reminder, your support makes this show possible. You can support this program by becoming a member at jointhemajorityreport.com. Your membership supports the free show. And then we give you extra content as a way of saying thank you. You also get it ad-free. So check it out. Jointhemajorityreport.com. As always, if you do not have the finances to support the show, and I know many folks going through different periods, maybe you lost a job, maybe you're having to take care of a family member, maybe you have folks email me, tell me that they're about to send their kids to college, so they got to cut back on stuff. Whatever it is, we don't want to keep anybody out for financial reasons. So send an email at majorityreporters@gmail.com. You got to wait a while because we're super slow going through emails, but we will get there and we'll fix it. We'll work out something with you. So jointhemajorityreport.com or majorityreporters@gmail.com. Also, justcoffee.coop, fair trade coffee, tea, or chocolate. Use the coupon code MAJORITY, and you get 10% off. All right, quick break. Film Guy, Matthew.
It's just a bad movie where there's no crying. Handing the keys to me in this red line, where the lock that you locked in the suite says there's no prying.
when the breath that you breathe in the street screams there's no science. When you look how you look, then to me that I cease lying and fall into silence. This is a life story, so there's no climax, no more new territory, so pull away, yeah, Max.
Wait, who is that?
That is Okkervil River.
Right. I like that song. Folks, you know, Fridays around here used to be super consistent with who we would have on. And we're still in, you know, sort of a rotation, but it gets broken up quite a bit because we're trying to mix things up as much as possible, keep things fresh for you. But sometimes you want to go back to the old classics, to those things that are like comfort food for you folks. And one of the earliest forms of comfort that we had at the launch of the show was we would get and this was back in the day when, like, streaming? What is this new technology where you can watch movies online? That's crazy. My children were younger, and so I wouldn't go out to see movies. And at the time, who could I get to recommend a movie? Well, I know. Matthew Film Guy.
Matthew the Film Guy is choosing your streams. Cassavetes on Netflix and other such themes. Maybe you'll watch one and learn a few things.
Matthew, Film Guy, you know, it just occurred to me that, in fact, you were not the first guy I went to for films. It was actually Chris Rosen, and it was only when I found out that Chris Rosen had been basically pretending to be a film critic but turned out to be an entertainment writer after a year or two that I brought you on. So forget what I said earlier, folks. Sorry.
But it's been so long now that it feels like I'm the first one.
Yeah. Yeah, it does. It does. That's true.
And listen, doing this show is the highlight of my 6 to 8 weeks every time. So I'm glad to be here. For however I got here, I'm glad to be here, Sam.
You know, I wish I could show everybody my computer screen right now because I wanted to. You promoted your appearance on this program with a picture. It seems like it's Schwarzenegger, right? And was that who it is? And Predator, I think.
Yeah, well, it's a series that I'm doing where I'm discussing the crossover between art cinema and the popular Hollywood cinema. You know, that's my bag. And so this is really for the hardcore film nerds. If you'll see the setting where he is, it's one of my favorite films, John Dielman by Chantal Ackerman, the late, great Chantal Ackerman. And I did a series where I juxtaposed people such as Schwarzenegger, Freddy Krueger, so on and so forth, into her kitchen.
That's part of a
little bit of a series.
But the other funny part is that when your tweet came up, and I'm looking at your tweet, it suggests who to follow, and the top one on that is Sam's de minimis penis. So I just thought that was...
Oh, a classic. I'm sure he's got
that's
a lot of
slander.
Good insight.
Yeah. That's
from his
slander.
Perspective down there.
Discovery? No.
It also makes me wonder if that's not your Twitter handle.
Hey, first of all, Matthew, can you hear me?
It would surprise you to know that it is not my Twitter handle.
Okay,
but I may have made that an IM name,
Matthew.
So it's actually deeper than you realized.
Okay,
can you hear me, Matthew? Okay.
Yeah. What's up?
Are you familiar with what just happened to the Krasenstein brothers?
The who?
The Krasenstein brothers. Right. The Krasenstein brothers, Matthew.
Nobody knows who
the hell
that
are the Krasenstein brothers.
Oh, I don't believe him for a second. He's saying that he's just only watching movies about incest from Sweden, but I think he knows exactly who they are.
Why don't you tell everybody?
Well, they are two resistance Twitter aficionados. The point is that they got kicked off of Twitter for creating bots. So is Sam's de minimis penis not you technically?
No, no. Potentially it's something else that you enlisted. That great idea, which did come from my mind and made it their own. So I feel it's an honor to an idea that I actually did have. So it's kind of an ironic connection you made to me. But no, I think at one point he was not the only other person I followed in addition to Mary.
Right. Not ironic.
I'll sue you.
Coincidental. But
coincidental.
Right. But Matthew, film guy, it's also interesting because this week I saw the I don't know if anybody else saw this. It was somehow we didn't come across this video. You know, there's a lot of videos we don't play, obviously, on the show we come across. But Schwarzenegger got drop kicked. Did you see this?
Oh, yeah, I saw that. Yeah, I saw that. But he took it like a man. He stayed straight up. He just walked, looked behind him like, who the hell did that to me?
Yeah, it was pretty weird. He was doing some, like periscoping or something. I don't know where he was at some event.
He got Captain Kirk kicked. He got that flying 2-foot kick.
In his back, too, which I was super surprised. Just some dude.
Yeah. Well, I mean, he's like pushing 70 and over 70. He's had like 3 heart surgeries. And he still stood straight up completely when that guy hit him. So, more power to Schwarzenegger.
All right,
keep doing what you're doing, Arnold.
So let's just start with this tweet, because this is I'm fascinated by this little project that you got going here, where you have this kitchen, you put Ferris Bueller in there, you put Freddy Krueger, and you put what was that, like Mr. Mom? Is that what
that
Keaton
that's
movie?
Mr. Mom.
Yeah.
Good
okay.
call, Sam.
So what's the point now?
Well, here's the thing, Sam. You get one side of the piece. In order to really appreciate it, you have to know both sides. So I know there are some film nerds out there, some cinies, some actual cinephiles who are looking at that and loving it and laughing their ass off because they realize that that is the kitchen where 90% of the masterpiece Jean Dielman by Chantal Ackerman, which I mentioned earlier, takes place in. So please write in, let us know that you are out there, fellow film nerds.
Okay.
So, yeah.
But what,
it was a way of entertaining myself at some point,
okay.
but it became like a theme.
Because, okay.
listen, these are Hollywood film icons sitting in this mundane of all locations, which to me is one of the greatest scenes or locations for scenes in all of cinema.
Okay.
It is okay. It is okay.
Yeah, it's okay.
it's more than okay.
A little tired.
It's fantastic.
Are you selling those? Are you selling those on eBay? Those like, can people just take them right off your Twitter feed or what?
Just take them right off. It's more of a driving traffic thing than the actual selling thing.
I see. And what are you driving traffic to, Matthew?
I've got a couple things. You know, actually, I've curtailed my auctions because I sort of hit a wall with the auctions. Now it's just make me an offer. It's more of like a bazaar. It's like an open air bazaar
but
of all the crap that
I don't need.
Where
are you getting
anymore.
This stuff from? I mean, don't you ever run out of stuff? It seems like you have like an endless supply of stuff. You've been doing this for 2 or 3 years.
I think anybody can look into their life and they can find an endless supply of detritus and consumer crap that they do not need anymore.
But I've been to your apartment in Queens, and it's not super tiny, but it's not like, where were you storing all this stuff?
All over the place. And here's the point. I'm getting rid of it to get new stuff in. You see, your place is what Carlin said is to keep your stuff while you go out and get more stuff. Well, I'm getting rid of some stuff so I can get more stuff. Some of it is actually classic stuff that's been sitting in a drawer for years. Like, I have a pair of vintage 80s purple Skids drawstring pants. Michael, are you on that? Do you understand what that means, Skids, from the late 80s, early 90s?
No.
Those are worth several hundred dollars.
What do they mean?
The vintage market. They're like hip-hop pants. They're like hammer pants. They're like baggy drawstring pants.
Why would you get rid of those?
The early 90s.
I'd love to see you.
You never heard of them? All right.
I know what you're talking about now. I don't know that word, but I would like
Skids,
to see you in those.
It was a brand. It was a brand. Oh, yeah, you would have seen me going to school in about 8th or 9th grade in those.
Why
but,
don't you come in studio and wear them?
All right, that's a deal.
Yeah.
That's a deal. If these don't get moved by this great sort of heat that I'm getting on it right now. But
How much heat
that,
are you getting?
Case.
How are you
Absolutely.
Measuring this heat? Are you getting on the on the baggy pants?
I'm just assuming. I'm just assuming. You know, my Q rating goes up every time I appear.
Okay, but my point being that, I mean, they're on the eBay. You just, like, I mean, are people sending you offers? You're not doing any type of, like, auction?
I assume they're about to start rolling in. Any minute now, I'm going to be flooded. Almost positive.
So there's not necessarily heat. There's just heat around the possible manufacturing of heat.
Yes. While we're discussing the heat, I believe the heat is self-generating.
Okay. So the generator is hot to the touch, but it's not quite putting out any heat into the environment.
I bet it is. I bet it. We can't feel it yet. What's the speed of heat? It hasn't reached us yet, but it is coming.
Okay. And so what else?
We've had better riffs.
What else are you? What else are you up to, Matthew?
I'm sorry.
What else? Are you?
You know, I'm producing and editing Ted Alexandro's great podcast, A Little Bit Me. I suggest everyone go on their favorite iTunes and other podcast related places and check out A Little Bit Me.
I think we're a little over inundated with podcasts. Thank you. Patreon.com/TMBS. Majority Report. Become a member. Literary Hangover.
This is Ted.
The Antifada.
Sorry. No, those are great. Those are serious podcasts. This is a comedian's kind of look into his life and kind of musings on what it's like to be a comedian and just his sort of unique genius outlook on life. It's not a serious depth.
So it's a little bit more like deconstructed with Mehdi Hassan.
Nick DiPaolo, first guest?
No, Mehdi Hassan, he's huge. Nothing like that.
Nick DiPaolo, a guest or what?
I would love for those two guys to talk. And I know that they know each other from the Comedy Cellar, and right. I know that they've, you know, locked horns on a friendly basis before because they have opposite polar political opinions. But he's not yet.
Ted's not racist, and is that what? Ted's not racist.
No, you said
that they have polar political opinions.
Really not. Let me just tell you one thing. Yeah. Ted does a segment called The Catch Up, where he randomly calls people that he knows, comedians that he has in his phone, without setting them up for it. And then if they say okay, then they continue with the call, and that's the little interviews that he does. So I think there could be a good one to be had with Nick DiPaolo at some point.
That would be awesome.
That's pretty good. That's sort of
that
what,
would be good.
That's what this Friday slot first started for me on some level, too. Was just like, I haven't talked to people. And then people just decided, forget it. And I was like, forget it. Maybe we shouldn't talk anymore.
Yeah, well, that's like you and I. We get to spend all the time that we really want together here, and this feels good, and that's enough.
Right. I don't. Have I seen you in person in like 5 years?
No, not since I think. No, your daughter's bar mitzvah, which was more professional arrangement.
Right. Well, I mean, I wanted you to witness it. I just didn't want you to do it unmediated without any type of like.
And
after you do
that.
The work, you could go to the buffet, but not till after the work's done.
Exactly. It was a touch and go there if I was going to the buffet, but I eventually did go to the buffet.
Did we let you in? I mean, it was tight. It was
good
very,
job, gentlemen.
No eye contact
during professional hours.
And I spent most of it telling Dave Derby how much I love the song Pilot Light, you know, so that was like a great thing.
Yeah, well, we made Derby sing, too, and no, that's not true.
I wish you would have.
I know. I think people, the 13-year-olds were just not, probably would not be into it that much.
No, I had more fun cornering him and Benjamin and making Benjamin admit that you were his bully outside the dance place or whatever.
Oh my God. Don't even start with Benjamin. He was on the program a couple of weeks ago.
I heard it was excellent.
I should also
excellent
say
stuff.
A lot of people were, you know, wondering about that interview. I got a couple of emails who were slightly confused.
No, they don't get it. No, they don't get it.
They don't get it. All right, and so I assume you're still teaching at
It's the Central Queens YM and YWHA. Yes, I am.
And let me ask you this. I mean, is there, like, are you getting new people signing up? I mean, is word getting out?
Yeah, it actually is. I've got the hardcore of, like, the disciples who are always there. And then it's growing. I actually have, like, 3 or 4 new students. And it's taken on a life of its own. I keep thinking about maybe retiring. You know, I think maybe I did everything I could do, but there's always more movies out there, and they keep bringing me back.
You're pretty young to retire at this point.
From that in particular.
Right.
Yeah.
are you doing a bunch of industrials these days? What's the industrial market like?
You know, it's up and down. I still do some corporate client stuff here and there. I can't really talk about it, you know, due to the nature of the work. But
of course.
Yeah, that's what pays the bills. That's what keeps the lights on. The film class is, that's more of a pleasurable thing. I spread the joy of cinema, sort of like this.
Right, of course. And I guess, I presume you push your eBay stuff at that film class, too.
That would be unconscionable, Sam. There's a line I wouldn't cross.
Okay, and so you're working on the Ted Alexandro Show podcast, we've gotten caught up on everything that's going on. Is there anything else important we should know about? I mean,
I've actually mentioned my apartment. You know,
yeah.
I'm sorry. What was that?
You've gone through the world's longest engagement. It seems like too. Also.
Well, we're going for the record, Sam. What can I tell you?
All right.
I mean, you know, we want to make sure it turns out right.
Right. Believe me. I know.
Yeah, I do. I believe you. I especially, specifically believe you.
Right.
But in light of that, we're actually spending a lot of time remodeling our apartment. You talked about our apartment and how it's sort of a, you know, square foot challenge, but we've actually maximized it in a really amazing way. It's a rent stabilized apartment in New York. So, you know, you hold on to that if you can get one.
Right. Of course.
You know, they recently just met, the board just met, and I'm only getting, like, I think a 2% increase on the next 2-year lease. So, you know, I've been doing, like, this old house, like this old apartment. Mary watches a lot of home renovation TV shows, and she has a lot of good ideas. And
so how much renovation are you doing? Are you taking down walls in there or what?
I mean, we're stopping just short of actually taking down walls. Like, the landlord himself has actually going to, like, re-skim coat our bedroom and do, like, some of that kind of work. But, you know, like, we're putting up brand new shelves. We're putting up, like, units, changing closet doors. I made, like, a barn door sliding door.
Oh.
You know, if you want to talk, like, Jewish incompetent carpentry with me for a minute there. Like,
that sounds cool.
That kind of works.
That's...
I hung a door. I drilled into a door to make a doorknob. So, you know, it's like real work, Sam. Real work.
Good stuff. I'm glad to hear that, Matthew.
Yeah, I know. It's right in your area.
It is. I've actually hung multiple doors. Myself, it's not an easy thing to do. It's not.
And
people would be surprised how difficult that is to do, because it is weird. The physics of a hinge, it's very strange actually. Hanging a door, but there's techniques that you can find online on YouTube.
That's right. And listen, when you're not independently wealthy, you do that kind of stuff yourself, and you save some time, you save some money. So I feel good about myself. I get my hands dirty, you know, do some real work, not just this intellectual stuff I'm known for.
No, I feel pretty proud of myself for that.
Thank you very much.
All right. Well, with that said, what should we watch this weekend, Matthew?
Well, I would love everybody to go and check out my Letterboxd diary, where I keep track of all the films I've watched. It goes back to 1995. We talked about that before. It's letterboxd.com/LangdonBoom. And you'll see the kind of mishmash of movies that I see, because, you know, it's not all Sturm und Drang, depressing Norwegian movies that I watch. I checked out the Avengers and the big movies, and I watch a lot of Star Trek kind of stuff. So you can track the sort of ins and outs of that kind of schizophrenia. But on this show, I like to bring out the ones that I think go deeper, you know, like...
I should tell you something about the Star Trek thing. We mentioned Benjamin. He was just up there in Toronto. And apparently, like, Star Trek is going to be this huge, massive franchise that like Star Wars.
Never, they're
going
to do Star Trek on TV.
Yeah, but it's going to get it's going in like 12 different directions. They have like massive studios dedicated up there.
What are they doing? How many? Like, they're doing,
I don't know. Like,
remakes?
Benjamin was doing a show that was built like as a subsidiary show to the actual series of Star Trek, the new series.
I think, like, the CBS
Star Trek Discovery. Star Trek Discovery was the new thing that they built huge sets for, and they realized, well, we can do these like 15 to 20 minute little like set pieces, bottle episodes of other little like short films, basically set on those, because we already paid for those.
Yeah.
So they call those like short treks or something.
Yeah, it's weird.
And those are all on CBS streaming. Yeah.
Yeah, very strange.
Yeah, it's weird.
Yeah, very strange.
It's weird. But as a Star Trek junkie, it's like they had me at, you know, in the birth canal, so it's like I'll watch it all.
All right.
You'll even watch those?
Glad to hear that you're in the
I'll even watch those,
birth
Michael.
Canal.
Wow.
Judge me.
No, I'm not judging you.
So what do you got? So this is when you bring out your highfalutin stuff.
So listen, yeah. I showed in my class Paul Schrader's last film. I don't know if you guys ever brought it up on the show before. It's called First Reform.
It's awesome.
And it was – did you see it, Michael?
No, that was Brendan.
No, that was Brendan.
Oh, Brendan, you saw it? Okay, yeah. It was totally awesome. It's like he's, you know, say what you will about the man personally and his politics and his sort of his cinematic legacy. He wrote Taxi Driver. He wrote Raging Bull. He wrote and directed a lot of great movies like Mishima and Patty Hearst and American Gigolo. Blue Collar is another one that it's like a very political content. But this one I thought was a great one for this show because the content, the text has political overtones, has like environmental crisis kind of overtones. But the content in the sort of the higher sense, the meaning of the movie is a spiritual, existential kind of, transcendental, as Paul Schrader wanted to sort of make films in the mode of meaning. And it really challenges you. It throws you for a loop. It doesn't go where you think it's going to go, which is sort of his kind of MO with Taxi Driver. You kind of liked him and then you didn't like him. And so I highly recommend everyone see First Reformed. It has a crazy ending, but I really want you to use that as a gateway to the filmmaker that he's really kind of not cribbing, but sort of working in the style of, who is Robert Bresson. And he made a movie called The Devil Probably, which every Antifa, every environmentalist activist, every DSA member needs to see The Devil Probably. Yes, it does start with the main character committing suicide, but it goes on to create, I think, one of the greatest pictures. And this
spoiler
was in 1977.
Alert, right? I mean, spoiler.
Yeah, no, that's the first five minutes. So it's the opening shot as he killed himself, so not a spoiler alert.
Oh, great. Thank
but
you.
It goes on to give, I think, one of the greatest sort of encapsulations of the spiritual malaise that has led us to our current political malaise. Because let's be honest, Sam, I love your show, I love what you do, but art is deeper than politics, right? There's kind of a first principles kind of thing. It's the news that stays news. And I feel
said your mom.
Unless we ground ourselves in that kind of stuff, our politics are not going to really be connected. They're not going to be progressive.
It's sort
way.
Of like,
well, so, you see that attitude, and I'm not knocking it, but
no, go ahead.
But
now knock
but,
it.
But the reason why the left is it does not have the fervor of the right is exactly for you just gave a perfect example for that. Because, and I'm not saying it's right or wrong. I'm just making an observation. I've said this in the past. You know, largely speaking, center to the left people, they want to elect a government and have it just work so they can go off and do things that are more important. Pay attention to things like art and, culture.
But Sam, as an example, I mean, you've made this point many times, and it's true. But as an example, something like the Jerky Boys punitive damages call, which we played in the office just the other day, which was probably recorded in like 1989, has so much more sort of poignancy to it and urgency of spirit than any CNN clip
of
that
course,
we happen to be.
You're only proving my point. Because I actually agree with that, and you agree with that to make that point, and that's the problem. Because then, you know, regardless, there are people out there with the same attitude, like, I'm going to elect, Joe Biden, and then it will just go back to normal, or I'm going to elect Bernie Sanders, and he'll take care of it, and that's it. We can go back to sleep, and that's the problem that we have. Can you imagine?
That's
on,
the whole.
Can you imagine, like, anybody on the right saying, like, I just want to, you know, investigate film and this and that, and you know, get past. I just hope that they outlaw abortion and, basically
Sam,
prevent.
You're talking about the problem of people being asleep, and yeah, it's nothing against what I'm saying that most people are asleep. Most people are working off of kind of less self-examined reasonings. They're just kind of. You know, they were taught what they were taught, especially as we hear about authoritarians and all that kind of thing. They just know they don't think about what they're saying and doing, and they go about their business. You know, I don't know if that's necessarily the answer is to, you know, for the left and the center to be more asleep. You know, I don't think that's actually helpful to move in that direction. It is kind of a dumb brute force of the right that they walk in lockstep and don't think deeply.
But Matthew, what about? Yeah. What about, are you familiar with Mark Fisher's capitalist realism?
I've heard the title. It's probably on my Amazon wish list.
So
but,
you actually would really like that book, and we've been discussing it on we're doing an episode on it on my show soon, and so it's very much on my mind. And one of his arguments is he writes about music and film a lot, and he actually says that part of the reason that there's so much remake culture and that it seems like culture doesn't have anywhere to go, even in the terms you're talking about, is because our imaginations are so constricted by the market system, basically.
Oh, absolutely.
That people can't imagine and participate.
And, you know, at least in Europe, they had a kind of government system that was funding the arts, which has been cut back and cut back. But at least they had that idea in place. And really, in America, we had that, too. We had a lot more grants. New York State had a lot more grants.
Well, he's even talking on those terms. I mean, it implies that, but he's talking on a big, you know, the quote, you know, the quote from Frederick Jameson that it's easier to imagine the end of the world than the end of capitalism.
End of capitalism.
So that informs what people can even do in terms of where they can go in their thinking and their process. So people think, oh, I'm going outside of politics. I'm doing something that's more long lasting. But meanwhile, it's like the old Keynes quote. Keynes, it's for economics, but supposedly Keynes said, what a man will confidently tell you is like, you know, common sense is usually the discredited idea of a dead economist he's never heard of.
Matthew?
Yeah.
Wow.
I'm here.
Well, no, but I think I like that Keynes line. But no, doesn't that infect what you're saying?
A true work of art will liberate your consciousness in a way that, yes, it's still being in the couch, in the system that it was delivered to you in, but when it's a truly disruptive, in the sort of imaginative sense, work of art, it transcends that. And yeah, it's everything's compromised and everything's got a delivery system that colors it. But there are still artists making these kinds of films that, you know, it takes a little bit more to seek out or to find. Are they pure expressions of a freedom from capitalism or freedom from any kind of system of thought? No. But I feel like that's the striving for, the kind of movies that I'm aiming for.
First Reformed. Yeah, you did it and you snuck in two. First Reformed, which is your gateway to the devil, probably. So 2017 film, First Reformed, and the devil, probably a 1977 film. Matthew Film Guy, we will put that on there. And, of course, you will put it on your list. Where do you keep the list of all the things you've recommended here?
It's letterboxd.com, letterboxd.com.
Letterboxd.com, and what do we search? Just Matthew Film Guy?
Nope, Langdon Boom. I think Matthew Film Guy's in there too, yeah. So Langdon Boom or Matthew Film Guy. Yeah.
Sam's De Minimis Penis.
Sam's De Minimis Penis. Thank you so much, Matthew Film Guy. Always a pleasure.
Thank you very much, Sam. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
I'm going to watch that movie.
Follow Matthew on Letterboxd. It's great. It's just like the best IMDb page you could ask for, basically.
Wow, that's a good idea. I didn't know. You can follow? What is it? It's like a social media thing?
I guess it's like a social media thing, but it's just lists of movies like that people have watched. It's Goodreads for movies, exactly.
Oh, and is there an app?
Yeah, it's great.
Letterboxd.
Completely unsolicited ad that I'm doing for Letterboxd. All your favorite podcast hosts are on it.
All right, I guess maybe we should have a page. All the movies recommended on this.
Well, he has that.
Well, I know, but we should do. Why should he get it?
Let's just copy his page.
Yeah, let's just copy his page. We just add add a couple from Isabel back in the day, and then we're done. All right, folks, going to take a quick break. Head into the fun half. Reminder: join the Majority Report. Over at jointhemajorityreport.com. Michael, today is Friday, which means that Tuesday already happened.
Precisely.
Which means that people cannot watch the show live that happened on Tuesday because it was in the past, but they would be able still to watch it in retrospect.
Yes, and I should say, as mentioned on TMBS, we're off next week, but on Tuesday...
Why? Why are you off?
Well, I actually don't want to...
What?
You know I'm not here next week.
What? I didn't know that.
I told you this week, so in person and sent an email.
Right.
We can talk about it on the break. Anyways.
Why? Where are you going?
Undisclosed location.
to just make sure you do it well and you do it with passion. Passion.
Okay.
So.
This is intriguing.
I'm going to go meditate for a week, but I don't want to say where.
Why, are you afraid that people are going to try and follow you?
Paranoia knows no depths.
Your paranoia?
Sure.
Okay.
Anyways, I'm going on a meditation retreat.
When and you're leaving today?
Yeah.
So if anybody wanted to follow you there. Good. That's now.
It's like the diplomacy.
Now, are you going to take like a vow of silence?
Yeah.
Are you serious?
Mm-hmm. It's a silent meditation retreat.
So you're not going to speak for how long?
About a week.
Oh, my God.
Get ready.
Yeah.
When I come back.
You can't wait.
Just leave a ton of voicemails and messages for him while he's up there.
What's that?
You just leave a ton of voicemails and messages for
him. Yeah. You don't mind if I keep texting you stuff, do you?
You can text all you want. My phone will be off.
All right. Michael, your Patreon account is down.
Any joke
that
about,
would be
like,
the one thing
horrific.
That would like break through.
Yeah.
They're just running down the monastery steps and knocking on the door. Mr. Brooks, you informed us that we should only contact you if there was a problem with your Patreon account. Well, he's got some bad news.
Well, I know what I'll be having anxiety attacks about the first 3 days I'm up there, so thanks. Already preset. On Tuesday, we talked to Brandon Sutton about, we covered a lot of stuff. We talked about conspiracy theories, ideology, alienation, inaugurated a new segment called Daily Show Gone Bad, and also compared and contrasted Warren and Sanders' foreign policy, military policy, or lack thereof. This Sunday, there is a episode focusing on the privatization of the space race and capitalist realism. And then the following Sunday, we're going to be we recorded an in-depth primer on Hezbollah, which is a really important group for understanding how Lebanon works, obviously, but particularly in light of how it's used to sort of marshal energy towards invading Iran. And then we're going to unlock on the podcast stream, you'll hear an audio of the LA live show. The video, which will be is still up only for patrons, but the audio will be unlocked with Anna Kasparian, Big Waz, and Nando Vila. And then Matt, you're also going to be giving us a little taste of Literary Hangover.
Yeah, the episode where David Griscom and I, and along with my friend Alex, talk about Oscar Wilde's The Soul of Man Under Socialism.
So excellent. So, and I will say we're five away from 2,300 patrons, which is a nice little threshold to pass. So join today and get a global political education. Patreon.com/TMBS and get your tickets to the Chicago live show in August.
Just to be clear,
yeah.
All this is going to happen assuming there's no problems.
Assuming that there is no problems.
All right. Well, enjoy your silent retreat.
What would it take to get you to go on one of those things?
I don't know. A couple $100,000?
Wow. You really would never consider doing it?
No, of course I would consider doing it. I mean, but probably not anytime soon.
Well, just because of logistics.
Well, logistics with the kids, but it's like to the extent that I have any time away for the kids for that period of time, which I have not, I think, since they've been born, a full week. 7 days. I just think I got too many other things. I got too many things in the list than just sitting there and being quiet. I mean,
it's a little bit more complicated than that, but I hear you.
A little more complicated.
When you say just sitting there and being quiet, you think you're just like up there, just kind of like chilling?
No, I imagine like you go to like, yoga things, and then you practice like playing, the harp or something, and go in for your coffee enema or whatever it is.
Can we cut this in between the Skillshare ad reads, please? Skillshare promoter reveals his real thoughts on meditation.
No, Skillshare, you're confusing Skillshare with the Simple Habit.
Oh, excuse me, Simple Habit. Pardon me.
No, I'm not saying, and then you meditate, but I'm assuming you do all that stuff.
I have no idea.
Yeah, you play harp and get denim.
Do a little basket weaving.
Do a little basket weaving.
Yeah, I don't know. I just assume it's like that.
If only it were so.
Like that movie Safe, right? With Julianne Moore. Nobody knows what I'm talking about.
No.
All right. Also, check out The Intifada, patreon.com/TheIntifada. What do we have on Literary Hangover?
I knew this day would come, but I didn't expect it so soon.
Yes, the Margaret Fuller episode of Literary Hangover is going to be out tomorrow. She's a very interesting. She's maybe the first woman to publish a feminist tract after Mary Wollstonecraft, like 40 years before she did. She wrote Woman in the 19th Century, and she's also a socialist, a revolutionary socialist, that was the first female foreign correspondent for the New York Tribune, and she wrote about the revolutions in Europe in 1848.
Wow. All right, folks, 646-257-3920, time for the fun half.
You are in for it.
All right, folks, 646-257-3920. See you in the fun half.
Are you ready?
Who sent us this?
Anarchy. Alpha males are back. Back, 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 back. Boy is back. And the alpha males are back. Back.
Just as delicious as you can imagine.
The alpha males are back, 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 back. And the alpha males are back, 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 back.
Just wanna degrade the white man.
Alpha males are back, back.
I take all of it in my throat.
Alpha males are back, 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 back.
Almost as what?
The alpha males are back, 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 back.
You are a madman.
And the alpha males are back, back.
I am a total cunt.
Can we bring back DJ Dannerke's song, please?
Yeah, or a couple of them. Just put them in rotation.
DJ Dannerke.
Well, the problem with those is they're like 45 seconds long, so I don't know if they're enough of a break.
That's fucking nonsense.
Hey, fuck. Reminder.
I do not have Parkinson's.
And the alpha males are...
Psych. Fuck them. Fuck them.
Almost says what?
What?
Almost says what?
Hell out of the bank. 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 Hell out of the bank.
Have you tried doing an impression on a college campus?
I think that there's no reason why reasonable people across the divide can't all agree with this. Psych.
And the alpha males are back, 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 back. And the Africans are black, 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 black African. And the alpha males are back, 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 back. And the Africans are black, 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 black.
Donald Trump out there, doesn't a little part of you think that America deserves to be taken over by jihadists? Keep it at 100. Cannot hustle.
Come on! Fuck them! Fuck them! Fuck them! Fuck them! Fuck, fuck. Things I do for the bigger game plan.
By the way, it's my birthday!
My birthday!
Happy birthday to me, Jew boy!
I have a thought experiment for you.
And the alpha males are back, back. Africans are black, black. Alpha males are back, back. Africans are black, black.
Come on.
What?
Come on.
What?
Come on. Someone needs to pay the price for blasphemy around here.
I am a total
pussy. Pussy, 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 pussy.